And on the whistle, everybody breaks. Near post, deflects, header, goal! Banda 2-1 off the corner.
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle here with Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you?
I'm not tired for once.
How dare you break the streak?
I'm tired. What do you mean?
Okay, I was going to say, what is happening?
I tired myself out in like 7 different ways today. I had to vacuum my room twice. It's like fighting for my life. I'm always tired. My allergies are bad, which means I'm extra sleepy. Because when my allergies get bad, my body's just, like, I slept for 10.5 hours last night. And I woke up still, like, extremely sleepy, which I was like, oh, that's peak allergies. Because when my allergies get really bad, I can just, like, literally pass out. Like, the equivalent, even though I don't take Benadryl, like, how people sleep on Benadryl and they can just, like, sleep forever. That's me when my allergies get really bad. That's just my body's resort. It's like, we're just going to sleep. And so, of course I'm sleepy.
All of that is relatable. I'm having the same issues, and they might be allergy related, so that's interesting. However, I feel like, for my own curiosity and perhaps the curiosity of the audience, I have to go back to you saying you had to vacuum your room twice.
So I'm currently in my childhood bedroom and it's carpeted. And I haven't vacuumed in several months because, I mean, my knee is now, I'm going to say 75% functioning. But previously I did not have a functioning knee. And as a person with a terrible dust allergy, not being able to vacuum often. And so I had to vacuum twice because I like filled up the canister of the vacuum so many times. And so.
Fair enough.
I just had to go around the room twice and be like, I'm getting out all this dust. Because also I'm tired of my allergies running me ragged. Because sometimes I just want to enjoy my life and not be like scratching at my forehead at 2 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon when I'm trying to enjoy. Instead, I'm tired of being itchy. So I went around the room and I got out every piece of dust that was in that carpet.
All right. Well, that answers that. And I wasn't judging. I was just curious. I was like, I can think of a number of reasons why you might need to vacuum twice, but I wasn't sure which one it was.
No, it's all it's all dust related. I'm getting out all the dust, all the pollen. If you've been in like the New York area, it's gotten like hot and then cold, and now or got super hot, now it's back colder. And it's just the weather changes, planes, trains, automobiles. So I was like, I'm just doing a full reset today.
Well, shout out to you and cleanliness is what I meant to say. All right, we are going to get into this episode, but first, let us do a review, read a review. We love and appreciate it when y'all read and write reviews. Sorry, when y'all write reviews and drop 5 stars. We enjoy 5 stars. Any fewer stars and we get sad. And yeah, we don't like it. But also, y'all have been doing a good job countering the haters. So again, I must say thank you very much. And some of those, I have some very quick reviews that were dropped, and so I want to give love to those, even though they don't have a dad joke or a middle name or a level of tiredness for Courtney. But if you are going to drop a review, please include one of those things if you have them, but also feel free.
For Andre.
I mentioned that. I said it's of my own volition and against my will, to be honest. if you do leave a review, please feel free to drop one of those. But even if you don't have one of those, we appreciate the shorter reviews like this one from Black Star 4, which is just titled Found My People. And it says, this is going to be my favorite podcast real quick. Love that. Thank you for that review. And yeah, that's that right there. That's the mission statement right there. That's why we do this. Love it.
Very nice. Thank you, Black Star 4.
Yes, the fourth one. Okay, so in this episode, we're going to talk about obviously, both of us being Chelsea fans, we're going to talk about that shit. We're going to talk about the other Champions League game that happened. We're going to drop some NWSL kind of scores and notes and then get into heated and hyped. And I'm not going to say the thing that I usually say, which is this is going to be a shorter episode, even though that's kind of my intention. We'll see what happens. And maybe
hey, we've been told that we need to make our episode shorter. So,
yeah. We're going to try. Well, I'm not going to say we're going to try.
Anytime because we try, we end up talking for 3 hours straight.
Exactly. So
we're going to not try.
We're going to not try, and we're going to see how this goes. Ready?
Sure.
All right. Let's just get to it right now. We hated it. Everybody hated it. Emma Hayes hated it. I hated it. Barcelona fans loved it. But it was, I don't know what to call it. Robbery at the bridge, Stamford heist, the Romanian job. I don't know. There's so many things I could call this, but
it was robbery in 4K.
It was very much robbery in 4K. It was extremely frustrating. If you don't know what happened, Chelsea were up 1-0 after the first leg against Barcelona in Barcelona, the first team to beat Barcelona in Barcelona in like 8 years. And they had to come home to a sold out Stamford Bridge, the first time Stamford Bridge had been sold out for a women's game, which finally, awesome. About time. But it was great. And this was a good game for it up until the referee decided that she was going to make herself the star of the show. And I don't even know if she wanted to be the star. I just think she was in over her head, but we'll talk about it all later. Basically, what happened is she gave Khadija Buchanan a second yellow, which was extremely soft. Like maybe that's not even a foul, but gave a second yellow for it in the 59th minute. And then a penalty in the 75th minute was on Aitana Bonmatí, a foul. Either Jess Carter or Ashley Lawrence. They kind of sandwiched her. I've got my thoughts about that one. Bonmatí scored earlier in the game, had the first goal, which was in the 25th minute, which was a deflection, which is really unfortunate because it was deflected by Buchanan. Not intentionally, was trying to block it, but it did help it find the far corner when it was not headed that direction. And it felt like Hannah Hampton would have saved that if it wasn't deflected. So,
actually, yeah. I think it would have went wide.
It's one of those weird shots to me. The deflection made it speed up, which was weird. Normally deflections like slow the ball down, but this one was weird and just made the ball it looked like a great strike. But then when you look at it again, you're like, oh my God, Ballon d'Or, she's so great. And you watch the replay and you're like, oh, well, shit, that was just a whole lot of luck.
So that is so funny because it felt completely opposite in person. Because I will say I watched that goal going right in front of me, unfortunately. In real time, it looked like Bonmatí had a better strike, and the bobble the deflection made the ball bobble, thus slowing it down. And then Hannah Hampton couldn't get it. But then it's funny on replay, I was like, oh, the deflection also made it on target because I don't think it would have went in. But I also want to say, Nuskin unfortunately hit the post, If they had a wider shot on replay, you could literally see me reacting in the background because I was like almost right behind the goal, and I was like next to where one of the stewards sits, and I was like on the aisle, so like you could like literally see my reaction. And I almost tweeted like, if someone sees me on TV, can you just like send me a photo of myself? Because I was like, I'm very visible in a lot of these shots of the goal.
Yeah, so I don't remember many of the shots in the game, if I'm honest, because I was just angry. I was just angry. But I think Melanie Leupolz hit the bar as well, and it was one of those. It was flagged offside, but I think if she scores and they review that, I think it would have been onside, and so that was really frustrating. Mm-hmm. But you kind of like so. I didn't intend to bury the lead, but this is what I basically want to talk about with this segment. Because obviously, we're going to talk about the referee and the decisions. But the big lead is that Courtney, as you have heard, was at the game. Did a quick not even full weekend trip, just bounced for like Saturday, just hopped over to London for like a day and came back. So honestly, that's just bonkers that I texted and I was like, that's very brave. And like, yeah.
Very stupid.
I wish the experience had been better for a number of reasons for you. One, because anything that would have benefited you greatly would have definitely benefited me because we like the same team. Yeah. But like just the overall experience, let's talk about that first, like the game day, the build up to it, you know, the vibe around London for this game. Like, what was it like to actually be there? And then during the game, things are probably tense. But right up until like that Bon Mati goal, like what was the pregame experience? And then once it kicked off, what was the atmosphere like?
Well, I will say I didn't see a ton of pregame because I was in London literally for 26 hours. But the in-game experience was fun. At halftime, I meant to tweet out a video of this. At halftime, they had a DJ before, but like I didn't get to experience a lot of the DJ because it was so close to kickoff. But then at halftime, the DJ came back and was playing music. And there was a guy on drums and a guy on saxophone, like playing along to the beat of the song that was happening for a few songs, and it was utterly hilarious. I took some very, very good videos. And honestly, despite it, like the environment of the stadium was good. Like everyone was very, very much behind Chelsea. You know, obviously outside of the Barcelona fans that were there, like people were still cheering on the teams, like starting chants, all that stuff. I am really sad I didn't get to sing Blue is the Color, which is what they play at Stamford Bridge after Chelsea wins. But then I, like, you know, people were starting to, like, even after the, you know, the final whistle happened, people were starting, were still, like, I sticked around to, like, clap up the players, kind of see the environment. It was really, really heartwarming to see a few times when, like, Millie Bright went to warm up, when Fran Kirby went to warm up, and, like, the crowd just, like, roared. Even just, like, seeing them warm up, which was really, really nice, because I mean, I wanted Millie Bright to get one. Millie Bright went in as a 9, which I was, like, oh my God, the spirit of Arnold Clark. Please, if Millie Bright is ever to get a goal, like, I need it to be now. And honestly, until the end, like, the vibes of the actual game were good. Like, Chelsea were having some good chances. I think, talking about the actual game, the lack of a 9 just, like, burned Chelsea so hard. Like, no Mayra Ramirez, no Sam, like, no Mia Fischel too, but, like, that game was screaming out for Sam Kerr. I have never been at a football game more in my entire life of seeing a team that Sam Kerr plays on that like needed her on the field more in that moment. Cause there were just like so many things where I was like, oh, this is a goal for Sam Kerr. Oh, Sam like would have put this in the back of the net, something like that. I think the same probably could have been said for maybe Mayra Ramirez, especially given her history of playing Barcelona and coming from Liga F. But man, that game was just like screaming for Sam Kerr. And I mean, obviously I wish it turned out differently because I'm a Chelsea fan, but I also wish it turned out differently because it was Emma Hayes's last game at the Bridge. And it was like the first, like, and I feel this way about any time that there's a sellout, right? Especially like the first game of a sellout. Like if Gotham gets a huge crowd, if like when Bay FC started their season, even the same for like San Diego, like Angel City, like all these NWSL teams that are like either selling out their stadium for the first time or getting a record crowd or having a season open or something. Like, I always want those teams to win, because unfortunately we know with sports, like basically if you don't start winning, people aren't always going to come back. And so as I think about like the future of Chelsea women and wanting to play more at the Bridge and having those sold out crowds and stuff like that, it was like the perfect opportunity to get a win. And I feel like this is lost from a part of it. It's not like over these two legs, Barcelona did not look like themselves. They did not look like the team that we've expected to just dominate. I think Chelsea at times made them look not Barcelona-like. Like, Ashley Lawrence in person is so good, too. Andrea, I'm just talking. I'm just, like, D1 yapping right now. But, like, I don't know. It was a great, like, despite the loss, it was a good experience. But also, I just, like, I wish Chelsea won because they deserved it. And also there were times where I was like, Barcelona don't look like themselves in the way that we've seen Barcelona play and dominate and things like that. And so obviously I wish Chelsea got the win, but it didn't happen. And now all eyes are set on the league.
No, they're not. because I'm not getting over this game.
I also am not. Seeing the refereeing in person also was, I've watched many bad refereeing performances. So, I've been to lots of NWSL games and seen bad refereeing performances. Very few compares to this in terms of it was so clear that this moment was too big for the ref. And I don't say that about NWSL referees, because I think NWSL referees, because they're not fully professional, is what makes them do funky things. But it's not like the moment oftentimes is too big for them. Like, I feel like they lose control of the game by not giving yellow cards, but like not like that moment is actually too big for them. I felt like at times, and especially seeing like clips float through Twitter once I finally got better internet access, it was like this moment felt way too big for the ref.
So let's stop there, because I want to talk about that part of it. I have very much full awareness of the fact that we are two Chelsea fans talking about a Chelsea team that lost in you can chalk them up to refereeing decisions. Somebody else may come, and the neutral view would be, well, if Chelsea would have finished their chances that they had earlier, the whole game could have changed, yada, yada. But I also think that anybody would concede that if you take any neutral game and you remove a player and you give a penalty, it's going to change the game pretty dramatically. Now,
also,
I will concede.
Chelsea rivals were also saying,
yes,
we got
Ian Wright was like, that was a horrendous call. And I was like, yep, correct. So here's my thing. Like, if people want to argue about the penalty, okay, fine. Like, it's soft, but I've seen them given, I've seen them not, whatever. The biggest problem for me is obviously that second yellow for a red, and not just because it happened, but because it also happened and it was the perfect scenario to where it could not be reviewed. Second yellows are not reviewable. If it would have been a straight red,
unless
they would have been able to review it.
Unless it's the NWSL where everything is reviewable by VAR.
Right. So it was not. And so therefore, Chelsea just had to live with the decision without a review. And I think by now, if you haven't seen the foul, just look it up on Twitter if you want, or whatever you use. I'm sure you can find it. But it was just a normal. In fact, when play stopped, I was like, what happened? And I actually thought Chelsea was about to get a free kick, because two Barcelona players just like flew into Chelsea players, because it was basically just a midfield scrap. And there were a couple bodies flying around. And then the referee goes to her back pocket. And I was like, who the hell is she giving a yellow to? It's got to be a Barcelona player, because they just like wiped out Aaron Cuthbert. But she's marching towards Khadija Buchanan. And I was like, the hell did Buchanan do? And then she shows the card. And then she starts trying to unbutton the top pocket on the front shirt, which is where the red is. And I'm just like, are you shitting me right now? And gives the red card. And then we see the foul, quote unquote, the foul. And I was just like, you've got to be shitting me. So I don't necessarily think we need to spend a ton of time talking about the actual foul itself. I think there's enough consensus among neutral fans and even some haters that would say that that was definitely not worthy of a sending off or even a yellow card. Forget a second yellow, just an actual yellow card, the first one. But I want to talk about her and this and the referee. Ilana Dimitrescu is her name. She's a Romanian referee. She was put in charge of this match after, I think, she did a group stage match.
That was Roma versus Barcelona.
Yeah, and I think across those two matches that she did, she gave out 10 yellow cards.
She gave out one time 19 yellow cards between two U19 matches. Someone posted her referee, like, not her referee review, but like, you know, in the same way that you can look up player stats.
Yeah.
You can look up the same for the rest, and someone posted them on Twitter, and I saw literally a U19 match, and there was like 10 yellow cards in one match. And I was like,
yeah, okay. So one thing is, all right, this referee is card happy, which honestly, I would love to actually know and kind of find out when this assignment was given, because we do know that the week in between the matches, Aitana Bonmatí did a whole lot of complaining about the referee, about Chelsea's play, And it almost ended up being like she got a, and so I want to be careful because I'm not claiming corruption. I am claiming incompetence, but I'm not claiming corruption. And a lot of times when shit happens, it can be hard to tell one from the other. But I don't think that like the story and the narrative behind Chelsea going to the final in Emma Hayes' last game or last season would have been enough to sustain like that. That's not something that you would just say, no, the powers that be really seem to want Barcelona there. Yes, Barcelona's great and they're a favorite team on its dynastic run, but you're guaranteed to have intrigue no matter which one of those teams gets to the final. So I'm not going to go out and say that there was corruption. But I do think there's a lot of incompetence from the referee, but also from whoever appointed this referee, because it did not seem to me that, like, this is not me being biased. This was the biggest game of the season. Barcelona-Chelsea, leg two of a Champions League semifinal with Chelsea up 1-0 on aggregate. It does not get any better than that. Sold out Stamford Bridge. Like, it does not get any bigger than that. The moment and the occasion is massive. It does not feel like the time to trial a referee and see like, oh, well, you haven't done a match anywhere close to this caliber. How about you go out there? And I think that really showed in the clip that you were talking about going around Twitter of her face and reaction. You can see a lot of emotion happening within her face. And how could you not? But it to me, that just showed that she was like the moment, the crowd, everything that happened, her realizing how much she changed the match, like everything kind of hit her in that moment. And it looked like she was processing a lot of emotions in that moment. And that to me is not exactly what you want to see from a referee. And I don't think you would have seen that from a seasoned referee.
I think of two things. One, I don't know what goes into choosing referees, right, for this. I think it says something where she was a referee for leg one of that Roma-Barcelona match, which was at a sold-out Stadio Olimpico. And that stadium seats at least 60,000 people. It's somewhere, I think the capacity is somewhere between 60,000 and 61,000. It was fully sold out. Roma fans, they go, they sing, they jeer at the ref, all that stuff. However, that was a first, like, I also don't think people maybe recognize the difference in importance of the first leg versus the second leg. But I think for me, it's like, once you get to the semifinal stage of the Champions League, every referee from your center ref to your refs on the sideline, your assistant referees on the sideline to the fourth official need to not only have been at this stage before, but also been at a bigger stage, right? Like, it's not just that this is a semifinal of the Champions League and it's a second leg at a sold-out Stamford Bridge. To me, it's that, how, like, objectively, there have been, almost 20, maybe a little bit less than 20, Champions League quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, since this Champions League has actually been the Champions League and not, like, the Women's UEFA Cup. And in the last, like, I'm going to say 3 years, it's also accelerated, and not only in terms of importance, but like venue sizes, crowds, like intrigue of having people there. And as a result of that, it's not that your decisions didn't matter before, but now there's so many more eyes on each decision. And so it's so baffling to me that a ref was chosen. And maybe they're trying to do the thing right where they're like, we don't want to choose, because we know there's so much talk about the referees and the way the first leg was, like, refereed. We don't want to choose a referee, let's say, that, like, might have a lot of, I don't want to say, quote-unquote, not, like, bias, but, like, maybe they're like, oh, we'll choose someone green so that way the game can somehow be refereed with, like, the most, like, in the most neutral way or something like that. Like, I don't know. But to me, it's absolutely baffling that she's refereed two group stage matches in the first leg of a quarterfinal match, and to literally compare it to the men's side when you were getting to even the quarterfinals of the Champions League on the men's side, all of those referees are very seasoned when it comes to refereeing the Champions League and knowing the letters of the game and the way that the Champions League likes to be officiated and all that stuff. They're all extremely seasoned. And so the fact that this referee literally had two group stage matches and one quarterfinal match is absolutely baffling to me. Like, that's just absolutely baffling. Yeah. But I think that clip that was going around where people were like, oh, she's smirking. And then I looked at that and I was like, that's the face of a woman who's about to cry. Because I've been there. Thus, I've seen that. And, like, you're trying not to cry in front of people and you're just trying to keep it together so you can, like, go hide in a corner and, like, get your tears out. And so, yeah, I think it, like, that's absolutely ridiculous. But also, I think, like, I think with a seasoned referee, you also would have gotten, you would not have, like, the calls that not only Barcelona got, but, and I tweeted about this, but, like, there was a moment where it was, like, I can't remember what moment of the game it was, but it was, Barcelona was already up 2-1. I think it was Ingrid Engen got called for a handball. That was not a handball. Like, the ball literally, like, by letter, if she was in the box, like, by the letter of the law, they would not have called that as a penalty, because where the ball hit her was literally in between. Like, it mostly hit, like, her upper arm where her sleeve is area, which, if you know, by the letters of the law, IFAB, you can go look it up, literally look at the letters of the law of the game. That's not a handball when it hits you on the upper, like, your upper sleeve. And fans just started cheering, like, or jeering at the referee being like, hey, that's a handball. And then she gave the handball. And I was like, that was not a handball, like, at all. Like, that, but, like, by the letter of the law, like, that was not a handball. And to me, that's the biggest example of, like, the moment is too big. Because if that was a more seasoned referee, they would have stuck to their laurels and been like, that was not a handball. And also, it wasn't. I saw it right in front of my face. It was not a handball in the slightest.
And this is why I don't look at, I don't say corruption. I say incompetence. Because it's not like, and I, honestly, I think this is going to sound typical Chelsea nonsense, right? This is going to sound like it. But I honestly do believe that as pissed off as she had to be, I actually thought that Emma Hayes kind of, aside from the quotes that, like, hit Twitter with the graphics and kind of went around, you know, the we were robbed things and all that. Yeah.
Decision in the history.
Yes. Which, honestly, it's probably top five. I'm not going to lie. Like, it could be even top three and maybe not three. You know what I mean? Like, this was really bad. Because I don't believe that the caliber of the game, the eyeballs on the game, the state of the game in terms of, like, adding all of that context, adding all the context, I think it may not be the worst in terms of, like, how could you make that decision? But I think it is the worst when you combine how could you make that decision plus the context of everything else. But regardless, I want to read what Emma Hayes said between these quotes, because I do think that this was kind of rational and completely fair. And I do think that had this happened to Barcelona in the game and the game had gone differently for them, I do think that there would be a lot of they'd be saying pretty much the same things. Emma Hayes said, when you lose football matches and you've been beaten by the better team, 11 versus 11, that's fine. Like, they're the best team in the world for a reason. They had a strong first half. The deflected goal puts them in a good position. But in the second half, I felt we were just coming on top, and you could see the combination of the crowd and the players were driving us. They felt really confident. So when you get such a shocking refereeing decision, there's nothing you can do about it. It's hard when you've got 11, but when you've got 10, it's virtually impossible. I didn't think it was a foul, let alone a yellow card. When you lose a game, for us, we didn't feel we got the opportunity to lose it. That was taken away, and I think I was surprised that I saw her selected because she's known for easy cards. Basically, I wanted to focus on the part of we didn't feel we got the opportunity to lose it. And that's the thing that really just fucking sucks, is that I feel from a contest, like from like everybody has been waiting for Chelsea and Barcelona to play one another this season. It was going to happen sometime in the Champions League. As long as they kept remaining in it, they were going to cross paths, whether it was the final or the semifinal. It didn't matter. They were going. This was going to happen. And people wanted to see it. All of that buildup throughout the entire year, Emma Hayes' last season at Chelsea, all of that led up to this moment, and it gets spoiled by a referee. And that's the part that really pisses me off. Like, I really would have loved to see, but maybe Chelsea would have conceded three goals in like the post like 80th minute, and I would have just felt awful. It would have been like, y'all thought y'all had hope. And then, but you can, like, as much as that would have stung, like, you got to see it play out. And we never actually got to see this tie play out because it was basically killed of all momentum and all competitiveness after 150 minutes of play across two games. And we were supposed to have more than that. And that risk really, really fucking sucks.
It does. It felt like the end of that UConn-Iowa game where they're like, let the players play. Like, you're not going to call that foul. Let the players play. And, like, you know, and let them decide for themselves. If I'm being completely honest, at 1-1 or 1-1 on aggregate, I genuinely thought that Barcelona was just going to continue passing the ball around. I thought they were going to pass into extra time and then see if they could win on penalties. And like, I'm being completely honest. And, like, yes, and look, we've never conceded that. We are not Chelsea fans. And so, obviously, I was stressed during the game, but there was, like, there was truly never a moment, and maybe it's because I saw it in person and I saw how well Ashley Lawrence was doing against Caroline Graham Hansen over those two legs. I thought Graham Hansen had the two quietest performances she's probably had in a Barcelona kit. Ashley Lawrence was absolutely phenomenal. The same for Kadisha Buchanan. Like, I know that previously, like, you know, the goal, Bonmati's goal got deflected off of her, but she was making Salma Paduelo's life really hard on top of her at all times. And even at moments where, like, Barcelona was having their good combination play, Chelsea were able to really recover well and, like, quote-unquote, like, weather the storm of, like, you're never going to keep Barcelona from creating chances, right? Like, they have too much quality across the pitch to not make chances and make chances out of anything. So the way you stop Barcelona is by limiting the quality of the chances that they have. And I thought that Chelsea were doing an excellent job of that. On the flip side, did that mean that Chelsea was, like, also not necessarily playing like themselves and were maybe, like, a bit disjointed and clunky at times? Yes. But, like, if their number one game plan, and this makes sense, right? You have a 1-0 lead and you're trying to protect it and then maybe get, like, and maybe go on the fight and go through 2-0 on aggregate. But I thought they were doing, like, a really, really good job of that, especially seeing it, like, and I want to say, like, when you see a game in person, it's completely different than, like, watching a game on TV, right? Like, there are so many other little things that you can see in person, and also kind of getting, like, the mood and the vibe of how players are doing or how players are feeling is, like, completely different when you were actually in stadium and you can watch them and, you know, see all those small details that you can't see on TV. And so I really do, like, it's deeply unfortunate because it's, like, I thought Chelsea for limiting Barcelona were doing a really, really good job at that. And so it did really feel like you, like, yeah, it was, like, you didn't have the opportunity, like, the ability to lose in your own right was taken away from them by those refereeing decisions. Because, look, I'm going to be completely honest. I really do think that at one point I was, like, Barcelona is just going to keep passing this ball around and like, they're just, we're going to, like, pass our way into 120, like, through 120 minutes. And so, yeah, it really did feel just, like, I mean, deeply unfortunate. And yeah, like, you never want to have decision, like, you never want to have the outcome of big games be about the referee or the officiating. Like, you never want that to happen. You want the players to, like, put it all on the, like, lay it all out. And if you lose, you lose. And if you win, you win. But at least you can, like, hang your hat on, like, I did this, or this was the result of my actions, versus we're still here talking about the referee. Like, I would love to dig into the game and how, and, like, seeing Ashley Lawrence up close and like, for the first, really until Barcelona scored, like, how good Lauren James was and, you know, all the small little details of, like, things that were going right for Chelsea, but also, like, things that were going, like, still doing really well for Barcelona, like, being able to see, like, Bonmati in person, or seeing how how quick, like, we think the NWSL at times can be fast, or, like, players are fast, and it's, like, the same goes for actually a lot of these leagues in Europe, and I feel like they don't, doesn't always translate well on the TV, but versus you see them in person, and it's, like, a completely different experience, and I would love to talk about all that, but instead we're here talking about the referee and the decisions that changed the nature of the game. I mean, which it did, Because also it's like, I mean, yeah, like you could, and sorry, I'm kind of rambling here, but like that, like that's just the part that sucks. Because it, and I think also the part of it sucks, it's because you could not say, Barcelona was saying like we were the better team on the night. And I was like, you played against 11 or you played against 10. Also, you were not extremely dominant against those 10. Like, it wasn't like, oh, you lost a player, and it immediately was like, oh, Chelsea's out of sorts, and we're going to pelt the goal, and Hanhampton's going to have to come up really big. It still was not like that.
Yeah, so that's kind of my thing, is that, like, I know that, like, I want to draw, like, a clear line of, like, delineation between that second yellow for Buchanan and the penalty, because I still think if you have the second yellow... If you don't have the second yellow and Chelsea remain with 11 players, like the game is still tied. The tie is still tied. It's still 1-1 and the penalty happens. And okay, yeah, even if you concede, it's super soft, I think, and whatever. And again, I don't really want to rehash that, but it's like, even if that penalty call gets made and it's still 11-11, you still feel like something can happen. Again, one goal from Chelsea takes us to extra time, but extra time against Barcelona with just 10 players was just like, it was just gonna be very, very foolish. Like it left Chelsea with no real option to respond. And that's what really sucked, because it felt like there were opportunities, yes, early, but also there could have been more created late had the game been allowed to play out with the full complement of players on the pitch and not something so marginal taking away a player. So that's kind of where I'm at on it. I mean, I do think that at some point we may talk about some other things and look at it a little bit differently. I know Emma Hayes has got to be frustrated and pissed off that this is kind of how her Champions League career ends. Who knows if she'll end up going back to club coaching? I don't really know, but for now, this is it. And it's just like, there. I can make the case that without three of your strikers available,
like the fact that it was that I wanted, I actually really, am I shouting? It feels like I'm shouting.
You are, but it's fine.
Because I have both headphones in. We're talking about this in pre-pro, how if I have two headphones in, I'm like, I'm speaking too loud. In for the first time, I want to say in the last 4 years, really, injuries, and I mean like super significant injuries, and this is not saying that Pernille Harder's injuries were not significant, because they were, but even then you had Sam. I feel like for the first time in 4-ish years that the injuries were too much for Chelsea. And you were unable, like, Chelsea were fundamentally unable to overcome the injuries. Because it's like, you had an injury to Pernille Harder, but then you had Lauren James step up. Or then you had an injury, like, if Fran Kirby's out, and then you have Lauren James step up. Or you know, Girl really steps up. Or then you recruit other players who are able to come in and step up and make an impact. And for the first time, it's like, injury, Sam Kerr ACL. And as I said, that game was, if Sam Kerr was there, Chelsea would be through to the final. Like, that game was, I mean, honestly, that game was screaming out for any striker, but, like, especially a Sam Kerr. It's like, no, Sam Kerr ACL. Me official ACL, which, honestly, I am fully convinced that me official would have found a way to bully some of them center backs.
I can't hear you anymore. I can hear you now, but, yeah, whatever you said, I missed it, but.
I know it's in her blood, and I just know she would have found a way to bully some of them. And no, Myra Ramirez, who also, I want to talk about refereeing in the first leg. Myra Ramirez almost got her leg fucking, sorry to curse, snapped in the first leg against Barcelona. Like, she almost had a super serious injury. And if you want to talk about, if you want to have a full conversation about refereeing and refereeing's not protecting players like Myra Ramirez and Bunny Shaw, but that's besides the point. Like, to me, it was just that, yeah, injuries, like, for the first time, Chelsea just could not overcome the injuries.
I disagree. I actually think they did a great job overcoming their injuries, given the players that were out. Like, yes, would they have played better? Would they have better options? Would they have a better and more effective game plan to utilize with a healthy striker, or just not even healthy, just a striker that could be on the pitch and play minutes and like start the game? Absolutely. But I actually thought that we had not seen Chelsea play, like, neutralize Barcelona in this way. We have not seen Chelsea, like, really find a way to cope with such a that style of play, and then so many different layers and levels and methods of attack. You know, they as you mentioned, they handled Perlelo. She was not a factor. They had Bonmatí. It was only a deflected shot that ended up going into the goal. They handled Rolfo. She got in a little bit a couple times, but she was not able to do anything.
Really,
it was like
find her shooting boots.
Yeah, there was like one dangerous shot, and that was it. Caroline Graham Hansen handled well, slowed down. Like, I actually think that they had their best performance, and something that I didn't anticipate happening given who they had and who they didn't have. But this was like a fantastic game plan across two legs.
Oh, I
which
completely
only
agree.
Adds to like why I'm so frustrated about it is because I just think that they had done a great job of somehow coping with something that no other team right now has had to is coping with. And that's three strikers, two of which won't play at all this season because of torn ACLs, and one who keeps getting hacked in games and is struggling to play consistently because of the physicality that she endures because of the way that she's refereed, which is biased and wrongly. So, like, I actually think that given all of that, especially like having to start Katarina Macario, that sounds like, oh, y'all had Kat, but this was Kat's second start. And this was a way like expecting her, which she almost pulled off a crazy volley. I was like, oh, there's the Kat. I know she almost stuck that one in there. Yeah. But like having to start her, it was like, obviously it's great that she's back, but she's not at full strength. You see it in glimpses, and you see it when she comes on as a sub. But from the start of games, we just haven't seen it yet. And to come into the biggest match that Chelsea has ever played and start this match as a nine when that position was so key in terms of holding the ball up and giving the Chelsea a chance to kind of breathe, relax, get organized, reset themselves after Barcelona attacks, it's just a lot to ask.
No, I completely agree with everything you said. I just, what I mean by like Chelsea for once could not overcome their injuries is that those injuries were so, like, that's why Chelsea is not in the final right now, is what I'm saying, because of those not having three strikers. And like, look, I love, like, Aggie Beaver-Jones is one of my favorite young players, but also it's like, you are not going to start her against Barcelona. Like, she has never done something like that. Like, and so, sorry, that, like, that's what I meant. Not saying that I didn't think Chelsea played well and that their game plan and that they weren't able to, for the most part, and I mean for the most part, like, 92% neutralize Barcelona. I just meant it in that, like, not having any healthy striker at all is truly the reason to me why Chelsea is not in the final, because there were moments where it's like, oh, you're just kind of missing that clinical finishing touch that, like, a player who plays a striker will give you. But no, yeah, that's just what I meant. Not that I thought Chelsea, no, literally I thought Chelsea played extremely well. And also, like, Barcelona still, even though they had, and I mean, you mentioned that Rolfo chance, I was like, Rolfo did not have her shooting boots on. I thought a lot of players also did not have their shooting boots on. Like, they did not have that clinical edge that we just always see from them, and like that total domination that we always see from them. Like, over the course of those, and I mean, look, we talk about, like, Nuskin hit the post. Like, if that ball is an inch to the left, that goes in the back of the net. And now we're talking, you know, it's, I think that at that point, the game is tied 1-1. Or Chelsea goes ahead 2-1 on aggregate at that point. Like, it's just, but yeah, what I meant by, like, not being able to overcome your injuries is, like, you just needed someone there to be able to, you know, like, just needed a nine, and they don't have one.
Yeah, and yeah, and I definitely get that. I think the game definitely changes. It's just like, for me, it's like they still almost did it. You know,
they still,
it took
very much.
It took some egregious refereeing for it not to happen. Yeah, and that's more so what I mean. Like, yeah, having those players would have been better than not, but damn it, they still almost did it. And that part, I don't think we could have.
My heart almost exploded like 7 times in the stadium. It almost happened a few times.
I don't think we could have ever said or even would have anticipated that. Like, if you tell me that we're not going to have any striker going up against Barcelona.
Sam Kerr.
Yeah, I would have been like, hell, like, what's the score line? Because this is going to get ugly. And it didn't. It was really the fault of the referee that Chelsea didn't get to compete and actually either win or lose that game in the right way, you know, in the way that you expect games to be decided. So, okay, we've talked about that a lot, and we do need to mention the other semifinal. Lyon is going back to the Champions League final, so it's Lyon and Barcelona again. May 25th, that is your final. But Lyon...
2022.
Yeah, Lyon beat PSG 2-1. Selma Bacha scored a great, just walloped the ball in near post. It was absolutely from outside the box. It was great.
You should not get beat like that.
When it's a strike like that, I'm like, you know what? It reminded me a little bit of Croy Bethune's shot that beat near post as well. I'm like, yeah, sometimes those shots, I agree that a goalkeeper should not get beat near post, but sometimes when the strike is that wicked, it can happen.
To me, that's still embarrassing.
It's still embarrassing.
You should not get beat like that at your near post. Also, where that game, it was in the third minute. I was like,
Lyon wasted no time in being like, we're going to just go ahead and take control of this. But Tabitha Chiwenga scored in the 41st minute, which was really, really a really dope goal. Just Chiwenga's just absolutely killing it on two continents. I love it. And then Melchi Dumonet, which a absolutely sick backheel from Majri. That was just a little flick to roll the ball right into Dumonet's path to just give her basically an open net to just slide the ball into. It's just really, really delightful bit of footballing there. I enjoyed that.
Majri's been fantastic over both
she
legs.
Has. She has.
And so is actually Chiwenga as well. Without Chiwenga, I don't know where PSG would... Well, I could tell you PSG would probably not be in...
But where they are now still.
Where they are now, they would not be in the Champions League semifinals. They would not be... I mean, they're still second in the league technically, but Lyon ran away with it. But I was like, without Chiwenga, she has been an absolutely fantastic signing for them this season.
Yeah. We'll probably talk about that match more once I get over it. Again, it's going to take me a long time to get over this game, the Chelsea-Barcelona game.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I think I will always like this. It goes in the pantheon of like Cap playing 7 minutes at the Olympics kind of deal. Like it goes on the list of things that just every now and then I'm just like, I think how about them you. And I just get really upset. So like
how dare you?
Yeah. Yeah. Sophia Smith not going to the Olympics at all. Like these sorts of things. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. And
Williams being an alternate.
Yes, Lynn being
and
an alternate.
Been just pushing to have expanded squads, and that's why the reason the U.S. has a rose.
Yep, the thin Netherlands coach, and then Lynn Williams is the reason why we beat Netherlands. Yeah, yep, those things remain in my brain. Playing for a draw against, or penalties against Australia, playing for a draw against Portugal.
Hockey line changes,
oh my God.
This supposed to be a lot about Vlaco. This was not originally supposed to be a lot about Vlaco. We just started listing... the crimes that we endured.
There's so many.
We're watching the U.S. Women's National Team under him. And there were crimes that were committed.
So many crimes.
That are still sticking with us.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on really quickly because I want to just touch on some NWSL. We might not get to heated and hyped as we promised, but we have a couple things we want to talk about in WSLY, so let's do it.
I want to talk about Ann Katrin Berger.
Okay. All right, let me do this real quick, actually. I want to just go through the games really quickly and let people know kind of what happened in the games, in the NWSL games over the weekend. So I'm just going to run through the scores real quick because we also have games coming up. If you're listening to this, on the day it releases, that means you're also going to get yourself prepared to watch some NWSL on Wednesdays. three games on Wednesday. That's kind of wild, but apparently I think everybody has one or two Wednesday games, and this is a week in which they start. So over the weekend, we had Spirit 2, Barbara Banda 3. She didn't actually score three goals, but she kind of did. We'll talk about it. Angel City 1, Kansas City Current 3. Again, whomst is this, Vlatko? Courage 1, Reign 0, Royals 0-0. Just an both of those teams, just whatever. Red Stars 0, Sophia Smith, the Fighting Sophia Smith 2, Wave 2, Bay 1, and Gotham and Rossing shared points in a very just back-to-back extremely late goals that I, like, honestly, I might have to talk about Emma Sears. But I know we both want to talk about Barbara Banda.
I do want to talk about Barbara Banda because, first of all, we're not on the Banda wagon. We didn't start the Banda wagons. However, we were one of the first that got really, really hype about her. And she is just, we've been saying she's everything that Orlando has needed. Like, there have been so many moments watching them play early in the season being like, bro, they just need Barbara Banda. And like, they just need Barbara Banda. And that's all we saw against the Spirit is how important she will be for them down the stretch. But also just like, honestly, I think the smart recruitment and like clever tactical play to make sure that she is kind of the centerpiece of a lot of what they do. And right now defenders can't stop find a way to stop her. Like for that first goal, and also want to give, for that first goal that Angelina scored, like Barbara Banda in theory should not have gotten to that ball. She just zoomed around Butel, who, and then, you know, had an incredible ball into the box that Angelina scored, and also dedicated to Luana, who we want to wish a very speedy and full recovery. And also, it was in real time. I saw the goal celebration and I was like, who's she telling to take an L? I was like, that's kind of saucy. And then I saw the real meeting and I was like, oh, that's the nicest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But yes, Barbara Banda is everything that Orlando has needed. And she's the type of player where you just watch and you kind of giggle. You're like, you shouldn't, like, there are things that she does where it's like, you shouldn't be able to do that. A player shouldn't have like a 5 to 6 yard head start on you and you still get to the ball first. That shouldn't happen. And yet it does. And she's good with her feet assisting. She basically had a hat trick of goal contributions. Got the assist for the first goal, score the second, and then cause a penalty for the third. Like, she is absolutely fantastic and is going to tear up this league. Like, I don't think folks are really ready to see how much, or they're starting to get ready to see how much she's going to tear up this league. She is fun. She is faster than you think is almost humanly possible. Between her and Chiwenga, I'm like, y'all run at speeds that I don't think my brain can really comprehend. I would also add Lynn Williams into that mix too, though, however.
Yeah,
because so, Lynn also had a little run this Gotham's game where I just started giggling because I said, my brain can't comprehend how a human can move that fast. But yeah, Barbara Banda has been absolutely fantastic for Orlando and is going to tear up this league and is probably going to lead them to win some sort of trophy this season.
Yeah, so here's my thing about Barbara Banda, because I was at that match and I got to see her live. And
yes, tell us about her live.
Yeah, the thing about Banda live, and I think that if you're watching on TV, you're just like, damn, she's quick, or she's super involved, or like she's really difficult to keep a handle of. I actually think in the first half, and this sounds wild, all right? This is going to sound like Spirit propaganda. I understand that. But I'm just telling you what I saw. Tara McCown, who, yes, was a forward just a season plus ago, who is now a center back, was actually having a good game against her. She was anticipating the decision she was trying to make and getting very tight, very close to her, and being very physical. I don't know if she could have kept that up for all 90 minutes, but for the first like 15, 18 minutes, it was really, really good and impressive from her. And then Barbara Banda switched sides. And here's kind of the thing about Banda.
And thus the chaos began.
Here's the thing about Banda, though, that I think watching her live, I see why she's so effective. She makes decisions very quickly, and she is all the way the fuck in on those decisions. Like, when she said, oh, I'm getting to that ball that you thought was rolling out, she was gone. And that's why Butel was like, she was kind of stuck and kind of like, yeah, obviously in a foot race, she was never going to win a foot race versus Vanda. But the problem was she didn't think she was going to be in that foot race. She thought she was just going to try and keep Vanda wide and keep her there with just positioning. But Vanda made up her mind so soon that like, oh, never mind. I'm going here and then I'm going to get that ball. And she just did it. And it was like, no setup, no nothing. She's just gone. And you're like, oh my God. And she did that so many times where it's just like the decision making was quick and sudden. And that to me, combined with obviously the speed, but then the skill to be able to do something with that ball. Because a lot of people may, like there are a few players who could get to that ball, but they're just going to punt it across the, you know, and who knows if somebody happens to get onto it. That was a very deliberately curled cross. And met Angelina perfectly, which even that run was kind of, it wasn't tracked by, it was first Paige Mataier who was closer to her, and then it was Andy Sullivan who didn't see it as well. So it's like Angelina was allowed that run, but also it was the ball in from Vanda that kind of was put into the perfect space to be attacked. She didn't play it to the player who was right there. She played it behind them because that's where the space was. And so like the speed of thought, and again, that's another thing, quick decision. I see where I need to play this ball in space and not try and thread a needle from this cross. I can put it into this space and then we're going to have a runner onto it. It's just the way her brain is processing information. And as soon as she sees the opportunity to go and do something, it's like she's already there. She's already in the process of making it happen. And that's what makes her so scary. So yes, looking at the way that Orlando had been playing before she slotted into the nine, you were like, okay, it's funny to watch them because they very much need a nine. And now they have one who makes like instant decisions and very often they're the correct decision. It's going to be a real problem. Like the Spirit got it first, but a whole lot of other teams are about to get it.
I have a question. Do you think she made that decision to get that ball when Beutel made the decision to be like, oh, this ball is going to run out of bounds?
No, I think she'd already made up her mind. That's kind of what I mean. But like her quick decision making is that I think that Beutel had an idea in her brain about how things were going to play out and the space that she already had covered, and she did. It's just that Barbara Banda made a very different decision and made it look like Beutel wasn't ready. But she was technically ready for what the position was. Like if you take a snapshot of that before the ball gets there, you're like, okay, decent position. Everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, Banda's like, never mind. I see an opportunity to do this thing. And she just does it. And there's no reacting to that as a defender.
That makes sense. You know who's another striker who's going to tear up this league? And I don't think people are ready for her. Raylan Turner. So I really want to see Racing in person, especially seeing how well the rookies that they drafted have been doing. And so I was really excited to see Raylan Turner. Unfortunately, she did not start. And I said, why did you do this to me? This is a player that I wanted to watch across 90 minutes. But she came in, I believe, in the 75th minute or somewhere around there. She came in midway through the second half. But the moment she got in, I said, oh, she's fun. She's going to be fun. And it was actually in the same vein, her decision making that made me really, really excited about her. Because for those who do not know, Gotham is having an injury problem. They had an injury problem last season, if I'm being honest, and it's actually just kind of continued, where neither starting center back in Maitane Lopez or Tierna Davidson were healthy for this game. So you had a starting center back pairing of one Emily Sonnet and Sam Hyatt, who actually, I think, did a pretty good job. Surprisingly, I thought they did actually not a pretty good. I actually thought they did a great job as a center back pairing. And there's a whole reason why I think that is, but I'm going to save it for next episode because I'm assuming they're probably going to be the two starting center backs for Gotham next weekend. But Raylan Turner comes in. Obviously, she ends up getting the goal, which is great, even though it was like kind of almost like a little bit against the run of the play. I want to give a shout out to Emma Sears. Andre, I know you already did, but that run that she had just murdered like seven people. And I was like, golly. And it wasn't even her run down the field. I was like, all right, she skipped over Bruninha, who I think was actually trying to tackle her and like kind of get a yellow card, which is why her knee was up, and she just kind of skipped over it. And I was like, that's funny. And then she murdered a few people in the box with them quick cuts, which I was like, that's fun.
Just absolutely twisted Emily Sonnet into pieces.
Just twisted Emily Sonnet, but also another player too. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it might have been she already ran by Delaney Sheehan. There was another player in the box that she also put in twists. It was Emily Sonnet, someone else. But to that point, I was just giving props to Sears and Turner for the goal. But to that point, I thought Emily Sonnet had been playing really well. And then Turner comes in and just starts causing fits for her because of her small movements. She was so good at just bringing Emily Sonnet out. And it wasn't even bringing Sonnet like fully out of position. It was just pulling her like literally 2 or 3 inches out of position. And that's all she needed to just like pull Sonnet a little bit out of position. And then she was either able to run in behind or like, because of that, it would then change the way the other players around her were moving. And so Racing were able to get a bit in more behind. And I was like, oh, she's just going to be really, really good because of those small little movements of like, even just forcing someone to like double check their thinking for like a split second. And that at times can be the difference between, for example, a goal and or a defender going in to get a block or something like that. And I just thought that like when she came in, I was like, oh, she is going to be a like... I know I've often on the show we're saying someone's going to tear up this league, but she is another one that's going to be really, really fun to watch going forward because of all those little qualities where she wants, if like they want to play her as a traditional nine or they want her to maybe drop in a little bit, maybe play a little bit of a false nine to help like connect play, because that's what we saw in her first appearance was like she was kind of dropping in deep and being able to get the ball off to either an Unchenikanu or an Alexa Barr on the other side. But yeah, I was like, big props to Raylan Turner. Look, we've talked so much about how we're Chelsea fans this podcast, and Katrin Berger is like, it was actually my only second time, I think, seeing her in person. And she reads entirely in person how she does through a screen. Her cat-like reflexes in goal are just really fun to watch. Like, it was funny before Raylan Turner ended up scoring, but Emma Sears gets in and she has this beautiful curler that just Berger just snatches out of midair, and not even like, oh, this is a great shot, I'm gonna palm it out. Berger just catches it,
yeah,
and drops to the floor, and everyone was like, oh my god. And I was like, I've seen her do that so many times. I was like, the goal she's gonna pull off, and then unfortunately she's probably going to concede a goal that's like, why? Even though that's not Raylan Turner's goal, was not a why. I thought that was actually a really great goal.
I want to talk about that save that she made on that Sears shot, because
I was like, but she's going to do it over and over again, just snatch things out of midair, and you're like, how did you do that?
That was one of those floating shots where like I thought that if the goalkeeper, normally when you see a shot struck like that, you're like, if the goalkeeper doesn't get a touch on it, by the time the ball reaches like this point, it's a goal. And it felt to me like the ball was crossing that threshold, and I didn't see Berger like anywhere within the vicinity. And then the ball like continues to float, and then suddenly she just grabs it with both hands. And I was like, wow, the hell did she do that? Because I thought that was going into the back of the net. I was like, oh shit, Sears is absolutely just came on and like went bonkers. And she did. And she would have, I think, had Berger not been in goal.
I completely agree. But yeah, Berger just snatched that out of midair. And I was like, it was funny. I was like, well, I've been watching her for the last, she spent 6 years at Chelsea. So really last like 4 to 5 years, like she's just going to pull off some absolutely bonker save where you're like, that is goal bound. And she's like, just kidding. Which that shot was, because I completely agree. It was one of those, it was like one of those curlers where you're like, oh, that's going in. That's going in. I've been here before. I know the feeling. And Berger was like, nope, and just snatched it out of midair. And I was telling folks, I was like, she has like truly the most cat-like reflexes I think I've ever seen on a human being or any goalkeeper. Like, it's almost like freak of nature at times where I'm like, how did you do that?
But and there's also another aspect to Berger's game that I think people are going to enjoy, Gotham fans in particular.
Her distribution.
I hate to bring this up again, But do you remember Mexico versus the U.S. at the Gold Cup when that goal was being scored against the U.S., the second one, and the commentator gasped? Do you remember that?
Where she's like, if I'm being honest. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I do remember. It took my brain a moment to be like, what did that goal even look like? But now I remember.
Yeah.
Why did you bring me back to this memory?
I brought you back to that moment because there was a similar situation that happened in this game that was very funny. And I think people should listen to it again. I don't remember what minute it was, but if you can rewatch the game or what, it's because
it
was a
fun game. I know what you're talking about.
Berger pings a pass in the middle of the pitch, basically right into the center circle, right at a midfielder's foot. And the commentator
Jordan
was like,
Angeli. Oh, yeah. Jordan went, oh, and I actually, so I did hear about that. And I almost texted Jordan being like, just you wait. I do remember that. And I think that's why I tweeted. I was like, people are really going to enjoy Berger's distribution because she can ping a pass. And then I was telling folks in the press box, I was like, there was this one time against... Well, I think this time it might have been Manchester City, even though Chelsea technically did a similar one with Musovic and Aston Villa. But I was like, there's this one time against Manchester City. And it's actually funny because I wish Gotham had done it, just like invited the press and then just like let her ping a ball. Because I was like, if I had seen that in real time, I would have probably just like giggled a little bit to myself being like, I've been here before. No, but it was, I mean, to me, it was kind of a random or not. It was kind of a random move to sign Berger. I was like, something I was not, when it was announced, I was like, huh? Like, what? I wasn't expecting that. But no, honestly, I thought she had a really great performance. And then obviously we saw the return of Rose Lavelle, and she shows why she is. Can we still call her Pink Lava? Or are we not allowed to call her that now that she's on Gotham? Because technically that was like a fun computational error with the Reigns website. But
oh no, that became her nickname. That does not leave just because she's no longer on the page. She will continue to be Pink Lava.
Look, so, she showed why she was Pink Lava, and she's a really good footballing player. And also, I think it was deeply unfortunate that Crystal Dunn did not score, because I thought she probably had her best performance in a Gotham shirt so far. And it was deeply unfortunate that Carson Pickett, a player who should be on the U.S. Women's National Team, decided to deny her on the goal line. And we'll save.
Last thing that we need to talk about, because I think we are going to have to skip Heated and Hyped. We'll have to come back because there's actually a lot to talk about and a lot of serious things to talk about. Like,
yeah.
I want to talk about the World Cup bid. I want to talk about Project ACL that's happening. I want to talk about Zambia, what's going on with their federation, how they might. Don't know. Hopefully not. We'll see. We disqualified from the Olympics, so we're not ignoring these things. But with respect to the
feedback
this podcast,
telling us to stop talking so much,
correct.
Talk less.
So we're going to have to deal with a lot of that next week, and hopefully we get some developments or more information, or hopefully shit just maybe it gets better. Who knows?
Maybe it gets better. Hopefully.
Maybe not. But I did, before we leave, I cannot get away from this weekend without talking about the goal that Jaden Shaw scored. Y'all, this is why I keep saying she needs to be in the middle of the fucking pitch. I realized she was playing the nine.
Andre, what a concept. Her
what
being in the middle, not out wide? What?
And it's the way that she just reads space and moves and passes and moves. She basically orchestrated just tearing her way through the center of defense by just choosing the right time to make a pass and the right time to make a move, and the right time to show for a pass, and then what to do with the pass after she gets the bullet, receives the ball. Like, she's just so smart and such a good technical player that when you have a player that can make those sorts of decisions and can be that precise in their striking the ball, whether it's passing or shooting, there's not a whole lot you can do. And just go back and watch that goal. It was incredible. It was just pass, move, and then get to the spot before right in front of the center back. Like, all of that played out. It was almost like playing FIFA against, like, in like the amateur mode. It's just like all the defenders looked asleep, but they really weren't. It's just that they had no idea what the hell Jaden Shaw was doing, but she knew what she was about to do and they had no clue. It was so good. And she's only 19. I don't care. She, in my opinion, we'll see where Kat ends up officially playing and how much of her form she recovers. Her ceiling is definitely the highest that I've probably ever seen from a player, but obviously has to return from injury and get back into form. But like for me right now, Jaden Shaw is the best 10, not 7, not 11, not 9. She's the best 10 we have.
Jaden Shaw is absolutely fantastic. And I mean, Andre, I think you started banging that drum and then we all joined in with you of why she deserves to play in the center of the park, because you see what she does. I also just fundamentally think that unless you have a fantastic six, and even sometimes when you do have a fantastic six, people are really reluctant to pick up late midfield runs. Look, I mean, I've seen it. I can name so many examples, but people are just reluctant to pick up late runs from midfield, which is how she just snuck in and all of a sudden, you know, started that play and finished the play. But it's because it's just a thing. I feel like it's a thing across football. And it's just, again, talk about decision making and making that decision and sticking with it, or just forcing other like opposition players to just like double check their thinking for a split second. And that's the difference between a goal and, defender getting a block in. So yeah, I thought she was absolutely fantastic. Also just want to give a shout to a young middle part, a one Sophia Smith with brace. Cause yeah. She's back. That first goal, menacing. Absolutely made menacing.
Made him dance.
Made him dance. Just Banda and Young, or well, now it's Young middle part. Cause she doesn't wear bubble braid anymore. but yeah, absolutely fantastic. Honestly, I was like, since the start of this NWSL season, Melanin has just been flourishing.
Yes, that's another thing that we're going to talk about. And maybe we'll have an episode where we spotlight African players who are balling out, because I think it's unfortunate that you kind of had to like come to the NWSL to actually realize, hey, these players are good. But accessibility is an important thing. And obviously,
not watching AFCON games streamed on iPhone 4s.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, that's also important. And there's a lot to talk about regarding all of them. And hopefully we hear less. I've heard some from coaches talking about him, but I'm very much in tune to the pace and power thing and hoping that we're done with that. I don't think we're completely done with it in some realms, but definitely something to pay attention to, because you can't just be fast. This league has a lot of fast players and they don't do what these players are doing right now. Anyway, I think we have to move on. I think we have to end the episode. Otherwise, we're going to keep talking and then it'll be 2 hours.
I mean, look, we're very good at it. But yes, all I want to say before we go is Brazil.
I second that motion.
Brazil. I'm learning Portuguese. We will be there no matter what, but like,
facts.
I'm ready for it. And I'm also here for, I know we said we weren't going to talk about it, but the fact that the U.S. is pulling out and for 2031, their bid is going to be for equal investment, period. I think that got like kind of lost a bit in the reporting, but I saw that in that was the second line of the press release being like the U.S. and Mexico are rescinding, whatever, or recanting, I don't know, probably rescinding their bid, and they aim to do 2031 with equal investment, period. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, bye. I don't know how to end without just being like, bye, because I want to talk about that, but we can't. So
I know, that's why I was like, period, too far low. That's it. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.